You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 4th of January. Does it look like it's down to 9? Explain that, plus a look at points gained on a Friday and some of the reality that comes with it. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look at the Utah Jazz each and every single day. You can get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or if you got one of those brand new smart speakers for Christmas, you can tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Happy Friday to you. We are in Cleveland. Had a wonderful dinner last night at a place called Lola. Went by myself. Bumped into two nice people. Chatted with them for much of the evening. Just kind of a good reminder of how positive and fun people can be if you get a chance to meet them in a world that's got news stories that make you feel otherwise. Fun little one yesterday. Donovan Mitchell going through the Canadian airport wearing his Wayne Gretzky jersey, which I admire. Donovan was saying that the two people that he kind of most wished he got to see in his life were Gretzky and Jordan. I mean, think about it, Donovan's born in 96, I think. So he did not see either of them. I was able to tell him about the story. I was in college and decided that I had to go see, you know, Donovan. Didn't have any money because we're in college. And I'm in L.A., and we go to see a Kings game. And actually, if I remember correctly, I actually think I was up high enough with no one around us that I was practicing calling it. Not that I ever thought I was going to call hockey. Little did I know that one day I would. And Gretzky took a slap shot and went off the skate of the guy in front of him, popped up into midair. He took it out of the middle of the air like a baseball and put it in the back of the net. It was pretty incredibly awesome. So I got to share that story with Donovan as we wandered through the Canadian airport. Great games last night. Toronto got blasted without Kyle Lowry in San Antonio with all sorts of hoopla. And then Denver really showed their grit with a good win against the Kings, who don't know how to play late yet. And then the late game on the East Coast was super late. Overtime, Rockets now up to the 4th seed and look great. And that's where I start the show. It feels to me, honestly, if I wasn't a Jazz fan and wasn't with the Jazz, it feels to me like we're down to 9 if I include Utah. Denver, Oklahoma City, Golden State, Houston feel pretty solid. Houston's won 9 of 10. All they had to do was get Chris Paul hurt, and they're fine. I don't know how long James Harden can maintain this, but they've won 6 straight. And clearly, James Harden is one of the truly great players in the world and is able to just carry his team. What he's doing is astronomical. We'll see it in points gained, I'm sure. Portland is 22-16. They don't look good against us, but they're just solid. Clippers are 21-16. Spurs are 22-17. And really, the Spurs have been the best team in the league for a while. And the Lakers have LeBron. There's your 8 playoff teams. It feels as though Sacramento's suddenly not able to defend. Memphis has lost 8 of 10. Dallas has lost 7 of 10 and is 3-16 on the road. Minnesota has lost 6 of 10, is 5 of 15 on the road. Maybe if they get Robert Covington back, they can make a run, but they're 4 games below. And the Pelicans, again, not healthy, but 4-16 on the road, are 17-22. It's beginning to me to feel like the 8 playoff teams are there, and then there's just a question of whether or not the Utah Jazz are making their run. So it's kind of down to 9. And if you take road wins minus home losses, Kings are at 0, Grizzlies are at 0, Dallas is at 0, Minnesota's at -1, Pelicans are at -2. Jazz are at +2 road wins minus home losses. So that's a little bit of why you look at the Jazz, but they're only 8-8 at home. Denver's +7. Thunder +7. Warriors are +4. Rockets are +4. Blazers +2. Clippers +3. Spurs +1. Lakers +1. Jazz +2. So for all of everything that's gone on, it is to me beginning to feel like it's down to 9. And the question is whether or not we can start winning. And the schedule does it for us. Here we go. Starts tonight. We're playing teams that aren't very good. Finally. This, to me, has been the biggest aspect of this schedule. Is the road weariness has been real. The amount of one-off home games was real. Not playing bad teams. Cleveland's -10 differential, haven't played them. Chicago's -9 differential, haven't played them. Phoenix -8 differential, haven't played them. Atlanta -7 differential, haven't played them. Knicks -7 differential, have won against them. The Wizards are -4 differential, haven't played them. Orlando's -3 differential, played them once in Mexico City. Detroit's -2 differential, haven't played them. That's 16 of our remaining games are against the 8 teams that have a differential of 2 or more. And frankly, that's what's going to define whether we're in that group or not. We've got to go 14-2 probably against that group. And then you have a remaining 18 games that you probably have to go 12-6 against. Is that right? Do I come up with enough wins? I'm not sure I came up with enough wins. If we go 12-6 against that, then we're at 44, and I have something wrong with my math. We have to go 14-2 gets us to 32-22. And then we have a remaining 28 games against those other teams. And in the remaining 28 games, we probably have to go 16-12. That gets us to 48, and that gets us in. But that's the equation here. Of these 16 games, we got to go 14-2 and then go 16-12 in the other games. And that's where we stand. It all starts now. All the schedule talk, all the other stuff goes out the window starting tonight. Cleveland, Detroit, 2 you got to win. Milwaukee, probably not. Home against Orlando, got to get. Home against the Lakers is not in that group, but you got to get it. Home against the Bulls, you got to get. Home against the Pistons. We've got to suddenly have won 6 of 7 heading to L.A. to play the Clippers on January 16th. It's now. All the other talk goes away. Guys have got to get hot. Guys are really cold. Guys have got to get hot. Defense has got to click in. Then play the Clippers. You have Cleveland, Portland, Denver, Minnesota at home. Hopefully you're feeling good about yourself. Maybe you go steal that Clipper game. You suddenly won 7-8. Now you're rolling. This is the time. Then you got a Minnesota, Portland on the road, which actually we come home in between before coming home for Atlanta, Houston, Phoenix, San Antonio at home. This is it. All the talk, all the other stuff, all the wondering, all the bitching and complaining by fans who didn't want to listen to the schedule and tell me I'm just a homer. Yeah, I took it personally. All that, irrelevant now. Because now you just have to win. No more excuses or talk or whatever you want to call it. That's That's where we are right now. Locked On NBA Net on Twitter is a collection of all 30 NBA experts on the Locked On Podcast Network for you in one spot. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. It's also available on Instagram. All right, let's do points gained early because I think it'll walk us into a few things today. If you're new to points gained, it used to be PAC. Points gained is the offensive metric we use to judge players on this show. It's all based on how you perform compared to the average player in the NBA. The overall roster building premise is that if you could put a team together of all players that are above average or even just slightly above average, you'll have great success. If you obviously have a star, that makes it even better, and surround him with average players. It's hard to be average. You take the 20 scoring opportunities a player has and compare them to what the average player would do with those 20, or if you dispersed them amongst average players. That's the premise of the whole thing. True shooting percentage and effective field goal percentage are up slightly this year, by the way. So overall efficiency is up on average. To give you a little bit more background, we usually have over the years, if you kind of look at the history of points gained, the best player in the league is usually around four. Steph Curry last year was 4.7. Then there's two or three players that are over three and about 10 players that are over 10. In 16-17, Kevin Durant was the best at 3.8. Isaiah Thomas was at three, and then there were about 12 players. So about 13 players or so that kind of above two on the list. Right now, we've hit the halfway point of the season or close to it with 35-6 games, and it's beginning to show that. So Steph Curry is number one in the league at 4.4 points gained. James Harden has moved to number two at 3.6, meaning in a given night, James Harden scores 3.6 more points than an average player does based on his 27 scoring opportunities a game. So it gives you, if you're above average, you get credit for the fact that you can get shots off. Giannis Antetokounmpo is third. Kevin Durant is fourth. Those guys are all over three. Those are the four most impactful offensive players in the league. Rudy Gobert is fifth at 2.6. 11 scoring opportunities a game plus 2.6. It's incredible. Domantas Sabonis is seventh. Maybe the most unsung player of the NBA this year, Danilo Gallinari, is eighth. That's how the Clippers are surviving. As is Montrezl Harrell at nine. Another one that probably is not getting the credit. Clint Capela, 10. Kawhi Leonard, 11. Indiana's Bogdan Bogdanovic probably deserves more credit. We talked about Sam Amick yesterday, and I on Locked On NBA kind of just took a side glance at how the heck is Indiana this good. Well, there's your answer. Pascal Siakam at 2.1. Brooklyn's Joe Harris shooting 50% from the field, 49% from three, and 83% from the free throw line. And Atlanta's got a star in John Collins. At 2.0, LeBron James at 2.0, and DeAndre Ayton as a rookie at 2.0. Few more guys than usual, and rim rollers. It's important to have rim rollers. Clint Capela, Rudy Gobert, those guys matter. Marcus Morris for Boston is in the next tier. DeAndre Jordan in Dallas. Thomas Bryant playing well for Washington. Tobias Harris for the Clippers. You know, and you suddenly look at a team like the Clippers. Well, how are the Clippers good? Well, they got Montrezl Harrell. They've got Danilo Gallinari. And they got Tobias Harris. All in the top 20 offensive efficiency. Sure, they're good. Portland's first entry is Dame Lillard at 1.7. Toronto struggling offensively without the rim rolling of Giannis Valanciunas. Anthony Davis is at 1.6. Notable name not in here this year is Karl-Anthony Towns, who a year ago was the third best offensive player in the league. Joel Embiid at 1.6, Julius Randle 1.6, Davis Bertans in San Antonio 1.6, Malcolm Brogdon 1.5. This is where you get into some players who are probably a little better than people realize. Right? Davis Bertans is not probably getting the credit he deserves. Julius Randle's having a hell of a year. Free agent. They cannot afford everyone. Kyrie Irving, 1.4. Karl-Anthony Towns, 1.4. It's a big dip for Cat. Derek Favors, 1.4. With only 8.8 scoring opportunities a game. The only player in this group, other than DeAndre Jordan, who is below 10 scoring opportunities a game. Denver's Juan Hernan Gomez, Jared Allen in Brooklyn, Dwight Powell in Dallas, Spencer Dinwiddie in Brooklyn. Suddenly you see why Brooklyn's playing well. DJ Augustine in Orlando having a really good year. Good for him. JaVale McGee, Damon Jones, Nikola Vukovic, TJ Warren, JJ Redick, Jeff Green, Paul George. It's interesting. For all I blow up Paul George, not as efficient as I would have thought. Only taking 33% of his shots as threes. Still goes in line. I don't know why. Bielitsa 1.1, Blake Griffin 1.0, Steven Adams 1.0, Jeremy Grant 1.0, Ben Simmons, positive player 1.0, Buddy Hield 1.0. He's good last night. Never goes to the line. 5% of his possessions to the line. Jaren Jackson Jr. 1.0 is incredible. Those are all the players that are 1.0 or more. Here are the offensive players that are causing the biggest negative. And realize all those players that I just listed are 1.0. So if someone is negative more than one, they are having an impact that is negating that whole performance. Russell Westbrook is minus 3.5 offensively. It's killing OKC and somehow they're all right. Brandon Knight's not playing much. Donovan Mitchell, for guys that actually play, is the second most negative points gained player in the NBA right now. Minus 2.4. Let's dig into this for a second. So how, like, concerned should we be? What should our thoughts be on this? One is, it's been 32 games. It's a pretty significant sample size. His shot distribution, because he's not making his three, is down to 29% of his shots as threes and only 7% of his shots at the line. That's not great. This should open an eye a little bit. Like, you should hear this. In a few ways. One is on the whole previous conversation of, you know, are we one of nine? Hard for us to be good enough offensively with Donovan at minus 2.4. Like, that's a little bit of a different step than last year. He was not particularly efficient last year, but this is different. Second thing I would say is, in contrast, by the way, Donovan last year was a minus 0.6. So it's a big drop. I would be more concerned long-term if I didn't know Donovan and who Donovan is and what his makeup is as a person, his desire. But if I'm just analyzing this from a numbers standpoint, we're getting close to this having been now a third of his career. And that should be a little, just purely numbers, no emotion, no understanding of who Donovan is, no understanding of the workload he's got, no understanding of the fact he doesn't have teammates, just pure number, teammates that can help him carry the load. He has teammates, but there is that is that is this is pretty negative 2.4 is a big deal. And it's now half your career. Okay? Andrew Wiggins minus 2.1. Similar shot distribution in some ways to Donovan. Donovan's taking 30% of his shots as three. Andrew Wiggins is at 26. Donovan goes to the line 7% of the time, 7.6. Andrew goes 9.4. Kevin Knox minus 2.0. Colin Sexton minus 2.0. Trey Young minus 2.0. Josh Jackson minus 2.0. Now, other than Russell Westbrook and Andrew Wiggins, those are all first or second year players. So maybe you feel a little bit better about it. But Donovan's numbers get very similar to Dennis Schroeder, right? Who's capable of going off for 40 as he did against us, but is overall not a very efficient player. He takes 23% of his shots as threes, 7% of his shots as free throws. Donovan's better than that. Shoots 41 and 32. Donovan is shooting 41 and 29. I mean, a little bit of our record, without trying to put too much heat on the kid, is if our primary offensive guy is the second least efficient player in the league and is not as good as he was last year, hard for the offense to be as good. And thus, the 22nd offensive ranking in the NBA right now. Other negative guys, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Eric Gordon in Houston, Jared Bayless, Avery Bradley, D'Angelo Russell, minus 1.7. I know. 4% free throw. I can't get over that. I can. Everything else about him, I can start to like. 4% of his shots at the free throw line. You cannot live that way. Avery Bradley's at 2%. Frank Ntilikina, another guy at 4% of his shots at the free throw line, minus 1.7. Dwayne Wade, minus 1.6. Be interested to know if Miami got better playing Wade less recently. Mario Hezonja, minus 1.5, 6% free throw rate. You have to be such a great shooter to survive with a free throw rate that's low. Tyreek Evans, minus 1.5. Ish Smith, 1.4. Jamal Murray in Denver, who was unreal last night, minus 1.4. Unreal. He has bad shot distribution, though. C.J. Miles, minus 1.4. Ricky Rubio, minus 1.4. Andre Drummond, minus 1.4. Lonzo Ball, minus 1.4. If everyone's going to criticize Lonzo Ball, Donovan's shooting numbers are not different. Trey Burke, minus 1.4. Justice Winslow, minus 1.4. Goran Dragic, minus 1.3. Seti Osman, who we'll see tonight, 1.3. Stanley Johnson, we'll see tomorrow, 1.3. Negative. Draymond Green, minus 1.2. He used to be a positive. Trey Lyles, minus 1.2. And John Wall is out, minus 1.1. It'll be interesting to see if they play better without John Wall again. He's not as negative this year as he was other years. Jeff Teague in Minnesota. Jabari Parker. Victor Oladipo this year in Indiana is a minus. It's interesting they won without him this year. All right, we'll look at the last 10-game stretch and dig more specifically into the Utah Jazz as we continue. Remember, Locked On Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd gives you a daily recap on all the games, plus a good look at your daily fantasy game. And Locked On NBA has fabulous shows for you each and every day along the network. All right, last 10 games. James Harden is 5.5 hottest player in the league. Danilo Gallinari, 4.2. Giannis, 4.1. And DeAndre Ayton, 4.0. Joe Harris, then Joel Embiid, then Kawhi Leonard, then Thomas Bryant in Washington. LaMarcus Aldridge, Dame Lillard, Kevin Durant, DJ Augustine. Paul George, 2.9. Nikola Jokic is up here at 2.7. Lou Williams has not played much recently. Dennis Smith of Dallas is positive the last 10 games. Keep an eye on that. Maybe it's clicked in. Bottom 10 offensive players. Russell Westbrook recently a minus 5.7. Wow, that is terrible. Colin Sexton minus 5. Alonzo Trier minus 4.9. Donovan Mitchell minus 4.4. Dennis Schroeder minus 3.7. Ersan Ilyasova in Milwaukee minus 3. Jamal Crawford minus 3. Trey Burke minus 2.8. Klay Thompson minus 2.8. And Paul Millsap minus 2.6 in his brief return. And that's basically the rundown. Let's take a look at the Jazz overall. Kind of already done it, as we saw a bunch of our guys. But the Donovan thing's interesting. At some point, I think you have to take the analysis point when we hit, you know, there's two parts of the analysis you have to take on Donovan right now. One is you have to understand the load that he's being asked to carry and how massive that is. And then the next thing you've got to be really honest about is in about six games, we hit that he's now played half, a third of his career. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't continue to grow, but then that you can't take this stretch of struggling shooting, not being as dynamic as he was a year ago, and just throw it away. The other one that's interesting on Donovan is he just crossed over 750 threes, which is Nylon Calculus's analysis that that's the number where you know what your next 750 threes are going to be. And in his first 750 threes, Donovan shot 32.6%, 780 right now. What Nylon Calculus would tell you is that you now have a baseline at 753s of what kind of three-point shooter he is. And that your expectation for the next 753s should be 32.6. And if it's higher, then that's his new level. But you need groups of 750 to see whether someone's really changed his three-point shooter. Here's your Jazz numbers. Rudy Gobert's 2.6. Derek Favors is 1.4. Favors gets interesting. You know, everyone talks about moving Favors because the roster doesn't really fit and all this and all that. But, like, he's 1.4. Someone's got to take those nine possessions and be crazy efficient with those nine scoring opportunities he uses. Kyle Korver's 0.7. You know, the jump from Alec Burks at minus, I think, 0.4 last or something of the sort to Kyle Korver, 0.7 is a big deal. Howell Neto is 0.5. I always think it's interesting. I just think Howell Neto might be a little bit, I know he's too undersized and we see him get beat and all those kind of things. I just think he's a little better than he gets credit for. I love slightly above average players. Tabo Cephalosha is doing a great job as at 0.4. George Niang at 0.3. Jay Crowder is now positive. Royce O'Neal. Joe Ingles is even. A year ago, Joe Ingles was 1.2. Again, 6% free throw rate if you're not shooting the ball out of the gym. It's hard. And Joe's down to 37% three-point shooter. He's now an average offensive player. So really, all these comps are right off Joe Ingles. Dante's a minus 0.4. Ricky Rubio's a minus 1.4. And Donovan's a minus 2.4. It's interesting how close we are to actually having no dominant offensive player, but just getting average with, you know, Ricky's minus 1.4 is problematic. Last year was minus 0.6. Minus 0.5. Listen to this. Rubio goes from minus 0.5 to minus 1.4. Donovan goes from minus 0.6 to minus 2.4. Ingles goes from 1.2 to even. Those are big drops, right? We opened the show up. I ran through about the 20-some-odd guys that were one or better. There aren't many of them. And here we're talking about Rubio taking a point drop, Donovan taking a point and a half drop, almost two, Ingles taking a point and a half drop. Those are big. Jay Crowder's gone from minus 0.6 to positive 0.2. Rudy Gobert's gone from 2.1 to 2.6. And Favors is up from 0.8 to 1.4. I don't know how we stabilize Ricky and stabilize Donovan, and I don't know how you move those possessions around. I mean, the problem is if Donovan's not using 20 scoring opportunities a night trying to get his numbers better, who's using them? The other night, Ricky took a bunch of shots, and I was beside myself as a fan, and then I stopped and was like, well, who else takes them? Who else takes them? Ricky and Donovan's true shooting percentage are the exact same. Their effective field goal percentage is within 1% of each other. Last 10 games, we have even more severe on those three guards. Jay's been great, 2.2, carrying us. Rudy's been great, 2.3. Favors, 1.5. I mean, Rudy is really maybe a top 10 player in the league who's carrying this entire team right now to a virtual 500 record. Exum's been 0.3. So as great as Dante's been, the lack of three-point shooting, only 17% of his shots as threes, means that even playing at kind of his peak right now, he's a 0.3 positive, which is better than Ricky's minus 2.2 recently, no question, and Donovan minus 4.4. It's interesting. Is it a battle of nine, or are these offensive numbers so daunting that it's really only a battle of eight? Time will tell. Got to start winning now. That's your Friday edition of Locked On Jazz. Have a super day.